Welcome to part two of our conversation about living with the dead with Frank Sinelli. I've never had experiences in my house or anything of that nature. My house is fairly new. I don't really feel like it's haunted per se by any means. But over the last year and everything that's gone on, I went through a lot of difficulties here and some traumas, went through a divorce, and I had stuff going on in my house, like lights turning on and off that really shouldn't be, and just some weird idiosyncrasies. But once all that kind of calmed down was when I started kind of getting into a better place and being more positive and things had settled, all of that kind of lifted. And I just kind of looked at that going, okay, this is what that was. That's the energy. That was, you know, the negativity. That was all the anxiety. That was just the hell of what the last, you know, year and a half has been like. And I think a lot of people have had those sort of things going on that they're just trying to deal with. Tell me more about some of the specific cases and some of the stories that you've had where you felt that way going in. This is going to be dark. I'm going to really have to focus on positivity to get through this well.
Okay. So there was a old farmhouse. We were called in to investigate, and the claims themselves were very dark. There was an old woman waking the children up at night, trying to get them to go with her. And we knew, we investigated a couple of times, and every time it was just showing more and more of its true self.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually did a clearing on that house, and I knew it was going to be rough. So my friend that does the clearings, she tracked everything down to this creepy ass painting. I mean, it was horrible. The dogs from the house would not go past that spot. They had to be drug across that spot. So we get there, and I'm bait. You know, I'm keeping everything off her. I'm praying. I'm, you know, challenging, doing what I need to do. And I'm getting knocked around. And I'm a big guy. I'm literally struggling to stay on my feet. All said and done, she binds everything, gets everything locked away. I could sit down in the little boy's room. She looks at me. She says, "You okay?" I say, "Yeah." And my arm burns like hell. And I pull my sleeve up. I have three scratches coming down my arm and one coming straight across the wrist.
Mm-hmm.
So we go, we get the family. Dogs come in. Dogs go running right by that spot. Well, now the family wants this painting out of here. Okay. So I take this painting. So I got to get rid of this somehow. So I decide I'm going to burn it.
Okay.
It would not catch on fire. And, you know, it's just canvas and paint.
Yeah.
And it won't catch on fire. So I douse this thing with lighter fluid. I finally get it going. It's starting to sizzle like bacon and smells like what I can only describe as old lady perfume.
Wow.
Yeah. That was wild. I had that on video somewhere. It was, that was an interesting night. That was a dark case that we went into. I got called in to assist with a deliverance, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, it's not an exorcism. It's a deliverance. Well, I'm going to tell you, it turned into a full-fledged exorcism, something I really never want to be a part of again. But that was creepy. The things that happened.
Walk us through that. Actually, before we get to what happened that night, I want to ask a question about the painting. What was the history of the painting? What did the family tell you of why it was there, why they had it, and why they believed that the painting had, you know, what was kind of the caveat to the haunting?
So, and they didn't tell us this initially, but everything started after they brought this painting into the house.
Okay.
The dog started acting funny around it. The kids started waking up with nightmares. The kids started to feel scared and threatened, and so on and so forth. And it was a copy of, and off the top of my head, I can't remember, but it's a copy of a famous painting. But when you compare them side by side, you look, and it's just this little girl sitting on this rock or something. But you look, and it's like her hands are wrong for the painting. They're almost like man hands, and her feet are backwards.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
But you don't notice this right away. You look at this, it's like, oh yeah, cute little girl sitting there. You know, it's not till you actually start looking that, like, whoa, this is wrong. So something seriously wrong with it. And they got this, the woman was telling me her mother-in-law got this from her from an estate sale.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's the only history I have on that.
That's such an interesting thing. I mean, when we talk about sometimes people seeing an image or an apparition of what they think is a loved one, and they look and like, oh yeah, that's grandma. But wait a second, like her foot's backwards or she has a hoof or something. It's like, that's like the sign that's not grandma. It's something trying to look like grandma. The fact that that's depicted in the picture, and you have to look at that and go, wait a second, something's wrong here. What's your thought on how that thing was created? Was that painting, was the painter or whoever did the reproduction of that piece of art, was their intention there by creating it in a certain way for it to have some sort of energy to it or to conjure something? I mean, how does a painting like that have any sort of power or ability to begin with? Does somebody somehow put that into the object?
Yes. Yeah, you can attach energy or power to anything.
Okay.
And when you're dealing with those darker, you know, whether it was a curse, whether it was a malicious attack on somebody, whatever, this was put into that intention with that painting. Okay. And again, just like we talked about earlier with that thought form,
yeah,
it grows and it grows and it grows and it grows. And it just happens, and people look at it and it's like, oh, they get creeped out. They don't know why, whatever. And we actually had that happen. We go to different events and so on and so forth. So my girlfriend will find different things and kind of make them look macabre or whatever. We found this bride doll, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it's some thrift shop, and you know, it was kind of creepy to begin with. And Bella did her thing and made it even more creepy. Everybody that came by that table started freaking out over this. This is so creepy. Oh, my God, this is creepy, creepy. What? This thing finally picked up energy of its own, so much so that we noticed that we started having stuff happen.
Mm-hmm.
I have to bind her and I keep her in a case. And last summer, and again with all this negative energy on the rise, she started moving in the case. So we'd go down one day and she'd be like completely turned around.
Mm-hmm.
She'd be, you know, looked like she's trying to climb it. It was crazy. I had a rebinder, I had to rebind the case, and she's been quiet ever since, thank God. If she starts up again, I'm sending her to Zappos.
Yeah.
Have her for his museum.
It's crazy because it's like people can almost create haunted objects simply by their own fear of the object. The object may have nothing wrong with it at all. It can just be a doll. It could be anything. But because fear is projected onto it, because, you know, we somehow have these instincts that, well, this is just kind of a creepy doll, it can then become something that it never was. And it may not even have been a part of a trauma or a curse or something like that. It's just the energy of fear that's able to make these things do these things.
Fear is a powerful thing.
Yeah.
It's a powerful weapon. It's a powerful motivator. Fear has power. It's not a good power, but it's a power. And yeah, absolutely. I mean, we saw this happen with the doll. We've, you know, heard other stories of things like that happening. It's people don't realize what they can do, you know, and it took a while. It took a couple years of everybody just looking at this thing going, oh, that's creepy, you know.
That certainly is. It's just such an interesting thing to think about. Tell me about why you would never want to be part of an exorcism again. What occurred that night that you weren't expecting that makes you feel that way?
First of all, I am not qualified to be an exorcist.
Sure.
Okay. It's you need years and years and years of training. I'm comfortable, you know, helping with deliverance, clearing a house, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It got violent. There was things being flung across the room. The body contortions this person was going through. Yeah, it's, you know, what's the line from Men in Black? I've just been down the gullet of an intergalactic tug. This is one of 1,000 memories I want to forget.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of many memories that I would like to forget.
So walk us through the night and kind of how this went down and what you experienced.
So it started out as kind of like a little prayer service. This woman was going through depression and so on and so forth. And just really one of those everything, woe is me, you know, the world is against me kind of people.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And, you know, I mean, based on where she was, yeah, I can understand that. Then the person I was there with started asking questions and trying to call this out and binding and casting out. And then the look on this woman's face, it was like she wasn't even her. Okay. She just, her whole face structure changed,
mm-hmm.
and became very nasty and surly and, you know,
What's going through your mind when you're seeing this happen? You're seeing this woman almost transform in front of you. Are you feeling I'm in too deep here? What's, you know, it's obviously this is going on. So you can't just like, okay, I'm out. Yeah. It's time to run for the border and get some Taco Bell. You're there. What are you thinking?
I'm thinking I'm in way over my head.
Okay.
I do not want to be here. But I'm not going to run. I'm going to do what I can,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, and persevere and just pray for the best. And it's, I know you said not to do long story short, but long story short, this, we calmed it down enough where the woman came back, but she ended up like just bruised and beat up and cut up and stuff broken all over the house. And, yeah, it was quite the experience. I mean, you know, it's one thing you're investigating and you see something move.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's exciting. That's like, oh my God, you see that? Hope we got that on film. Right?
Yeah.
It's another thing when a lamp comes flying across the room at your head.
Mm-hmm. There's danger involved then. Someone could physically get hurt or worse in that sort of a situation.
People in that situation who are unprepared will get hurt. They run the risk of being possessed themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So, I do not recommend.
When she kind of came to, what did you do? Was it, look, you got to talk to somebody else who's more qualified for this, or how did you handle that?
Yeah. You know, first thing you do triage, you know, checking out her scrapes, cleaning her up, trying to build her up, get her back into that spiritual side where she wanted the help. She called us it. She wanted the help. She knew something was wrong. But yeah, then we referred her to somebody who could help her better. And part of that is psychiatric help.
Sure.
Because I don't care who you are. You go through something like that, there is some PTSD going on.
Yeah. And part of that, too, I mean, the part that I think it's glossed over sometimes is just how important the psychiatric area of it is. I think so many people either go one way or the other, like, oh, just the exorcism or the whatever you're going to do spiritually or, you know, investigative wise, that will take care of it. No, quite often the two work hand in hand because it all goes back to the lifting yourself up and not being so sunk into the depression and the anxiety and all of that's going to continue to pull you down. If you can't get out of that depression and all that, that's just going to continue to lead the cycle to continue. Psychiatric help is what can help you mentally get up and out of that hole.
Absolutely. You know, in retrospect, if I was looking at this case today, that would be the first thing I insist. It's okay. You need to be under psychiatric care before we do anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, otherwise it's impossible, man. It's like running uphill on ice. You put out a lot of effort, you get nowhere.
Sure. No, that makes total sense. One more question for you. We had talked about animals a little bit earlier in the show and them sensing things. And this is just kind of a question I've never asked to anyone before, but it just kind of came to me. We always hear stories of animals that are sensing things that we cannot. Now, obviously, they don't have a little screen on top of them where we can see through their eyes what they're seeing, but they are pretty damn good detectors of things. We don't really see animals being used in any sort of investigations. Why do you think that is? Or is this just a new idea that I'm just coming up with right now?
No, it's been tried a few times.
Has it?
And I know, ghost hunters did for a little bit. They had a dog that would go along.
I didn't know that. Okay.
It amazes me that it's not used more often. I mean, you could use dogs to detect cancer on people.
Yeah.
Right? They change. Yeah, right now, you can use dogs to detect COVID on people.
Sure.
Why not train a dog for ghost hunting? You know, and I always tell my daughter I want to train her dog, but she won't let me.
It's an interesting idea. I mean, if anything, just to kind of lead one to a specific area on a property that may be the area to look at more specifically, not necessarily she keeps barking and seeing things, but okay, this is where to set up. This is where we should really be focusing. Like a drug dog, like a cancer dog, that sort of a thing. I'm just surprised that it's not used more frequently.
It's as surprised as you. I would think, you know, and I know on our team, we have a couple of women who are very good psychics. But when we investigate, the only thing I want them to tell us is, hey, maybe we should set up there. Maybe we should set up there. And when you're talking about that with the dog, that kind of reminded me of that. Because I don't want to know that they're talking to a little girl named Sally.
Sure.
I want to get Sally over one of the devices and so on and so forth. And then, you know, have them corroborate.
But, sure.
Yeah, so I guess that would be the same with the dog. The dog would sense the energy. It's like, yep, here's where we're going to set up. Or, you know, the dog. And so many people tell stories. You know, you talk to people who have had experiences in apartments or houses, and they'll be like, yeah, the dog just sits there and stares in the corner with this blank stare. Mm-hmm. Or you can see the dog tracking something moving.
That wraps up part two of our conversation with Frank Sinelli. A big thank you to him for joining us on the program and sharing his many experiences with us. And a big thank you to you for supporting the show and keeping us on the air. We would not exist without it. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.